Kull warna sani tajpli l-kom semija ta' Campus FM dan huwa l-programm aħna hawn edizzjoni oħra ta' dan il-programm kif tħallna fix-xahar ta' Diċembru Eman Borċ isel milkom. Programm ieħor li qed jitratta mal-diversità tal-programm li qed ikollna ta' kull ġimgħa il-komunità LGBT ġewwa Malta, realtajiet li jeżistu l-esperjenzi ta' diversi individwi li huma parti minn din il-komunità. Kif ħob ngħid mill-bidu ta' kull programm il-komunità LGBT miex biss dawk l-individwi li jisejħu lilhom LGBT jew queer, però huma s-soċjetà in ġenerali għaliex fil-verità aħna nagħmlu parti minn soċjetà vasta, soċjetà kbira u soċjetà li fl-aħħar mill-aħħar tgħin li xulxin tiffjorixxi l-isbuħija tal-individwu u żgur li hemm numru ta' identitajiet differenti li jagħmlu l-individwu dak li huwa. Dan huwa programm speċjali nsejħlu hekk għaliex huwa ħajtratta suġġett li jiena ftit li xejn għandi tarif dwaru se jkun bl-Ingliż fil I'm going to switch in English and I'm going to introduce Edward and Andrew who in this next hour in this hour we're going to talk about not only sexuality or identification within the LGBT community but other identities that partake us as human beings, and one of the main subjects that we will talk about is STEM. Andrew, first of all, good afternoon and thank you for accepting this invitation, Edward, actually, because now I'm realizing I call you Andrew. But who's Edward? I know that you are a lecturer at the University of Malta, yes. but who's Edward as an individual?
So Edward Duca, lecturer at the University of Malta. I run Science in the City, the festival, editor-in-chief of Think magazine, and a bunch of other events. What we're trying to do really is communicate, involve, engage people from diverse backgrounds and walks of life in research happening at the University of Malta, research happening in Malta too. And this goes into the concepts like informed democracy, active citizenship, and so on. But this is maybe my work side of me, and obviously work identifies you to a certain extent, but there are other things that do. Another thing is sexuality and how you identify and reflect on yourself. And I think for me, from very early teenage years, I identified myself as bisexual. Now I probably identify myself more as pansexual, that I learn more about the different ways that people identified themselves. I remember coming out to my family. My father thought it was a joke. He decided not to speak to me when I shaved my hair.
Okay, fair enough.
But the sexual identity, he just thought it was a joke. He then got upset when I mentioned it in public, and he realized that it wasn't. But I think now actually they've come to terms with.
I think the first theme that you just mentioned is very important. The fact that sexuality is a journey; it's very fluid. As we learn our sexuality as we grow, as we go through puberty, even as we're through our adulthood, it's not something static. Mm-hmm. It's something that evolves, and it's a very good first introduction of sexuality. The fact that you're evolving also, and that you're getting to know yourself as an individual, and something that we'd like to mention is that everyone on earth, quite frankly, is subject to sexuality. Mm-hmm. It's not particular, because when we think about sexuality, we think about the LGBT community, about the queer community. But in reality, whether or not you're heterosexual or you're the typical straight, you also are subject to sexuality, and you also need to go through your journey. And this is something I'd like to mention also for our audience and for our listeners to also think about that and to keep that context. But you also mentioned that at the end of the day, work defines who you are. Mm-hmm. And something that I really appreciate on the research that I was also exposed to is how you're trying to merge both of them together. Maybe you give us a little bit of insight of what your work is in reality.
So what we work very hard doing is trying to come up with creative ways of making people aware of research that's going on, but also trying to get them excited about it so they get involved in it. A very exciting new project we have is called Varsities. It's trying to work with the people of Gzira to green Rudarjan. And to do that, we need to work with the local government, we need to work with central government, but we also need to work with local businesses and the residents there. Because a big problem with research is elitism and being perceived as elitist. Who commissioned this research? Why are we doing this research? What's the point of it? Is it really beneficial to society? And there is a scope for, you know, you do need research that is just trying to advance human knowledge, and there's a certain aspect of being human, like our gender and sexuality identifies us, so does the curiosity to discover new things. And that's what we're trying to do, really, is to encourage people to think critically, think for themselves. And I guess it is a bit the realization that this knowledge, this understanding of how things work around us really does help you in your everyday life, you know. Right now there's COVID, you know, everyone's raging about the vaccine, and the comments I'm reading are incredible, you know. There are quite a few people, or enough of a loudspoken minority of anti-vaxxers, of conspiracy theorists, of people who don't want that chemical injected in them. And you need to try and understand certain points of view, because just saying, oh, those are just, you know, dumb people and they just should go to read what's on the Pfizer or Moderna item list. It's been published, and you see it, and you list all these really complicated names. It doesn't make sense. So you need to be understanding and involving.
And how do we do? Like, this is a very interesting matter, because we are even the Trump era. Let's call it the Trump era. But there's quite a lot of, even with the mask. My right not to wear a mask, because I don't believe that the virus exists. Or, you know, these are thoughts that, quite frankly, even in Malta, to a certain extent, exist. Maybe not in the same mold, but the message is still there. I personally believe that this is maybe a fault to an extent on our educational system, that we cannot conceptualize, or we cannot critically think, we cannot engage in a healthy conversation where we don't talk about people, but we talk about we have conversations about ideas, you know. Through your work, do we believe that this is something that can be achieved? How can it be achieved?
Yeah, I mean, there will always be diverse opinions and points of view in a society, and that's
the beauty of society.
Yes, exactly. You can't expect everyone to agree with you, to have the same point of view. The concept of the failing of the education system, I understand where it comes from.
And again, it's my personal opinion.
Yes,
you know?
But it's the failing of the educational system in that sense worldwide. Because the problems we have in Malta are shared really all over the planet. There are some things unique to Malta, obviously. But issues like these things with COVID, wearing a mask and so on, you find them worldwide. And what surprises me is, you know, I've had friends of mine, they moved to Malta because they thought Malta actually had better measures, and they thought people were following the rules more. Now, if you talk to many Maltese people, they will not share that point of view. So perception and all these elements really... And also, if I believe that, you know, the Maltese are disorganized, they never follow the rules and so on, then everything I see will reinforce that belief. It's called confirmation bias. Yeah. And then you get other people who come from different parts of the world who see other elements of your society, which is why diversity is so important. Yeah. And just to bring the conversation back a bit, this is where the concept of LGBT and STEM, pride in STEM, because these are movements that are growing strength around the world, are really important, that we have a diversity in research, we have a diversity in our universities, and that is key. Mm-hmm. You know, that diverse opinion, having more women in science, in research, it's big push we're seeing everywhere, but also having more people from who are trans, who are bi, who are lesbian, gay, whatever, really, all aspects, all colors, are important to have the best research we can, because different people with different backgrounds will see the same problem from different perspectives. Some people might come with a more humanistic or human-centered design, or more hardcore scientific perspective, and all those views are important for something. To go back on the previous project of greening up Streeting Zira, we have academics from, you know, I think 4 or 5 different faculties, because that's the range of disciplines you need to address modern problems, really, and contemporary ones also.
And we're mentioning that we need to diversify STEM, and of course it helps the, I think, also the value of the research and the different perspectives. But history has showed that there are a number of individuals who partook part of the LGBT community who were researchers. I remember, I think you also worked on a project where there was the Rainbow Bench at university. Can you just give us a little bit? Because that is, I believe, what sparked the idea of this particular conversation to also invite you here. Can you explain this and also why you felt the need to give a space and then kind of a memory lane of these individuals?
So this happened about a year and a half ago now, I think, and unfortunately we never completely finished the project. We had a lot of ideas on what we can do about LGBT in STEM in Malta. One of the things that we did do were these LGBT benches. So we painted the benches in the colors of the LGBTIQ rainbow flag.
Exactly.
And that was actually helped by the authorities at university, which we're very grateful for, because their workmen painted them.
Cool.
In essence, that was started by an intern, Robin Castarfiot, and they led that initiative and created these rainbow benches, including going there and painting or helping to paint them. And then we wrote the names of different scientists. One of them, Nikola Tesla, is probably one of the most famous. And he probably was gay or bisexual. And he's very famous for his role in revolutionizing electricity, great inventor, radio-powered boats, crazy stuff. Really, really
has amazing. A lot of patents under his name.
Yes,
as I'm aware. You know, but
yes, he was a great inventor, not a very good businessman, a great showman as well, and very interesting life.
What was the aim for this, in particular, this LGBT in STEM in Malta, the project in itself? What are we trying to get across?
So what we're trying to get across is that it is something to consider within the STEM field, that there is research that shows in America that there is lower amount of people remaining in a STEM career if they come from the LGBTIQ community. So we don't have that research in Malta.
I see. And so even that in itself is it's something that...
Yes. And you have to start from somewhere, raising awareness about these issues. So we participated in STEM in Pride, or Pride in STEM Day, and these other initiatives to start raising the conversation. We also had a very lovely meeting with the Malta Gay Rights Movement, who were very receptive. to these ideas. The problem is human resources.
Yes.
So I'm very, very dependent on my interns becoming passionate about that and moving these ideas and concepts forward. So last year we managed these LGBT benches, and now we have some other ideas.
I can assure you it's effective. Yes. Because it's something visible. It's it's an artifact at the end of the day, but it at least it's at the university, it makes you think. What's the feedback that you are receiving when it comes to these projects? Because you were mentioning a number of projects, and I think one of the challenges is to receive feedback then to improve on your project. What's the feedback? Because this is quite I want to say a niche within a niche. Not to be disrespectful, because it's something that I as an LGBT advocate myself and activist myself, this is the first time I'm having this conversation, and I'm very grateful that I am having this conversation, and I hope that after this conversation we can continue also working together on it. But what's the feedback you are receiving, in particular from the LGBT community itself, that may not be interested in STEM as a career or a subject?
I don't think we've pushed it enough, far from it. We had a lot of ideas, but then we got overloaded with our other work, in particular Science in the City. Because the interns are recruited to help run Science in the City. So a lot of the other projects are things done on the side, unfortunately, even if they might be close to my heart. And in the end of the day, I need to run Science in the City as effectively and at the highest quality we can. And because it's a national festival. And as I said, I had the meeting with them, MGRM, and they mentioned the LGBT benches. So that's good that it has attracted some attention. But I think till now it's attracted some attention in those people who are very invested in the area. So I think there's a lot more we can do. We had plans to do things like videos with scientists who are ready to talk about their sexuality, to show that there are people within the LGBT community who are part of that. There's other people who are leading, not specifically LGBT in STEM, but they're putting like positive messages and posters around the Faculty of Social Wellbeing. And around your university. And I'd like to do more, to be honest. The feedback I've received is very positive from the people who became aware of it, but more people need to become aware about this issue, for sure.
I think that's good. The activist side of us is that it wants to always do more.
Yes.
Irrelevant how much we do, we always want to do more. Science and the City, I know that it's not particularly the topic of the day, but I'd like to also maybe ask, how was the experience of having Science and the City in the middle of COVID-19? And I know everything was shifted online, or rather than everything, a majority of it, but maybe give us a bit of a lowdown of how it went down in reality.
And Andrew can tell you more about this, but from the perspective of having to deal with first thinking we're going to do, you know, a reduced physical festival with some hybridization, to going to a much more strict hybrid festival, to then in the last couple of months being like, okay, we need to go completely digital. So that obviously put a lot of strain on the team, and the constant change that COVID-19 has forced upon us has also forced us to innovate. So I think we've created a really good online-only digital festival, and something we want to carry on. Lessons learned we want to carry on to future years. The problem is that just because it's online doesn't mean it doesn't come without a cost. And we need more money in order to do a physical and online festival. So that's what I'm trying to do right now, fundraise in order to help make that possible in future years. Because they really put a lot of effort. I want to give a big round of applause to Andrew and the rest of the team. Without their support, Science in the City would not have been possible in the way it was. Because we had an excellent team this year, and we got, I think we reached about 200,000 people on social media. And video views just on that weekend is around 6,000 to 9,000. we're still calculating the numbers.
You know that maybe a week and a half more, and then, yeah, then the data will come. That's the beauty, I think, of having this data and analyzing. But we'll also introduce Andrew and his work and his experience as an interior in Malta. But then we have like 6-7 minutes left, and I'd like to maybe touch a little bit more on what are the barriers that people that are part of the LGBT community face, yes, within the STEM, let's say, niche.
So the issues are biggest, as you might suspect, with the transcom community. That's a much longer list of issues. But normally it's people not using the right pronouns and insisting on not doing that. I've had trans people work for me, and thankfully they had an employer or mentor, whatever you want to call me, who is sensitive towards that, so it wasn't an issue. And in fact, their stay in Malta helped them transition more into the person they wanted to be. And in fact, the people back in their previous workplace were like, we didn't know any of this about the person, which I think highlights the issue. That we need to create these spaces where something simple like pronoun, and if people insist on that, what policies are there in place on how that is handled? You know, having the availability of mentors for people from the LGBTCOM community, specifically within the academic sphere. Right now, it's done very much on a, you know, who you know, informal basis, but having a structure in place that, like, hey, if you email this email, you know, we'll find you someone who can mentor you in this field within the com community also. It's, you know, then there are the whole things of genderless toilets and issues that brings up. I think the acceptance of the colleagues, of students and other academics, of people being open about these things within the working environment also, as much as it's appropriate to be open about your personal life within a work environment, obviously, but it's... A lot of the issues you'd find in any workplace, yes, and stuff, but they're also present in science and research also.
I think what I appreciate is also you're mentioning a real life experience that someone, yeah, who is trans and through the intern, they went through personal growth,
yeah,
in their workplace, and it kind of links back to our first point that we mentioned at the beginning of the discussion. At the end of the day, our work is an identity as much as our gender and our sexuality, and they all complement each other, and one needs to support each other. And I really appreciate that there's that evolution of human growth for this individual. For 2021, what are maybe the priorities for Edward in your academic career, but also when it comes to this particular journey?
So academically, it's very important for me to start like publishing a lot of the... So we do surveys, studies, and so on. And we've published one this year. We're trying to publish another two. It's very important for us to be open about, you know, what do attendees to Science in the City think, also to help other festivals, because we're doing really good work here and we need to share that knowledge with others. You share that knowledge to other academics through academic papers, you share that knowledge to other festival organizers and stuff through other fora, and we want to push those as well. So we want to increase the international reputation of like something like Science in the City. Apart from that, I think in this LGBT in STEM considerations, I'd like to invest, and I hope I manage to find the time for me and my team to invest more time in... Andrew will tell you something they've been thinking about. Again, it's always like, do we have enough time to actually... to actually make it happen. I do want to work more with MGRM and these kind of established organizations in order to get some of these things introduced. Now that Science in the City is over, I can start, especially in the new year, deviating my attention towards these projects that are very close to my heart.
Edward, I can rest assured you that you have the full support of LGBTI plus Gozo on the small island of Gozo.
Yes.
Maybe
thank
that's
you.
A whole other conversation that we can have in particular to Gozo. Thank you so much for your time. I know we just only touched the tip of the iceberg, but
yes.
Time is what it is. Again, time. But I'm sure that we can continue this conversation in future programs. And I wish you all the best for your work. And thank you for the work that you are doing. I think it's a very important aspect also to highlight. Hamor Walwaf, Musicali, il programm aħna sej kompli minna un nufti dara.
I used to live in the darkness, dressed in black, act so heartless, but now I see the colors are everything. Got kaleidoscopes in my hairdo, got back the stars in my eyes too. Yeah, now I see the magic inside of me. Yeah, maybe my head's fucked up, but I'm falling back in love with being alive, dreaming in lights. This kid to get lost her mind. Been looking for a star and sign that I'll be alright. Look to the skies, I found a rainbow, baby. Trust me, I know life is scary, but just put those colors on, girl. Come and play along with me tonight. I'd forgot how to daydream, so consumed with the wrong things. But in the dark, I realized this life is short, and deep down I'm still a child. Playful eyes wide and wild, I can't lose hope. What's left in my heart's still made of gold. And I know that I'm still fucked up, but aren't we all, my love, darling? Our scars make us who we are. So when the winds are howling strong and you think you can't go on, hold tight, sweetheart. You'll find a rainbow, baby. Trust me, I know life is scary, but just put those colors on, girl. Gotta learn to let go, put the past behind you. Trust me, I know the ghosts will try to find you, but just put those colors on, girl. Come and paint the world with me tonight, night. Trust me, I know life is scary, but just put those colors on, girl. You gotta learn to let go, put the past behind you. Trust me, I know the ghosts will try to find you, but just put those colors on.
Ikun għalakum l-ura l-program aħna għawn, l-lum il-ħamis, il-program aħna għawn tka kull ġimgħa tkun magħkom b'intervistu u diskussjoni differenti ma' individwi differenti fost il-komunità LGBTI ġewwa Malta, però anke b'laqta internazzjonali. Qabel inkomplu din l-intervista, l-ewwel ħaġa, nistiedinkom titlu fuq il-paġna tagħna tal-Facebook Eman Borġ on Campus FM, hemmhekk issibu l-intervisti kollha grazzi għal-podcast li għandu wkoll Campus Campus FM il-frekwenza 103.7 FM emmek ukoll intom tkunu tistgħu segwu l-intervisti minn ġimgħa l-ġimgħa u kif ukoll tagħmlu dik il-like u tkomplu issegwu il-mistiedna li jkollna ta' kull ġimgħa magħna u għalhekk inħeġġkom tagħmlu u segwuna fuq il-paġna tal-Facebook anke ta' dan l-istazzjon Campus FM hekk kif tħallna issa fix-xahar ta' Diċembru u minn hawn ftit ġimgħat oħra inkomplu dan il-programm anke għal skeda oħra, programm aħna se jkompli u se jibqa' magħkom l-inqas ta' Martu rispeħu li anke inkomplu jtukom dawn l-intervist tiegħek interessanti. Miej se nkomplu l-intervista bl-Ingliż għandi lil Andrew, first of all, thank you so much for accepting this invitation. I know there's a lot that we have to compress in these next 30 minutes, but before this discussion we're having a little bit of a chat also on who Andrew is, and I would like also you to tell our listeners on who Andrew is, where are you from, I mean, like all the introductory matters that will put us on the right context of this conversation.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So my name's Andrew Furbank. I'm from the UK, and any British people listening would recognize my accent's a little bit weird because I kind of lived in different pockets of United Kingdom. My degree was chemistry, and I did a four-year course. It was like a combination of a bachelor's and a master's degree.
Okay.
And then as part of that, I went over to the United States to do a year-long research project in Vermont, kind of fell in love with living overseas, kind of fell out of love with a laboratory and that kind of dynamic, because I think I'm more of a social person. So after graduating, I went to Chile to volunteer as an English teacher with the English Opens Doors program, which is amazing. Big shout out. And then I went to Hong Kong for a year and fell in love with Hong Kong, so stayed another 2 years. Ended up leaving primarily due to the kind of growing tensions in Hong Kong, yeah, of a lack of like a hopeful future in Hong Kong. Briefly worked in Abu Dhabi and then found myself in Malta, where I am today.
From all the places.
Yeah, exactly.
You're now in Malta. So you spent COVID-19 in Malta, or you were here before COVID-19?
So I actually came kind of halfway through. COVID-19 struck right after I came back from Abu Dhabi to the UK.
Okay.
And it was kind of perfect timing because we'd just been to my grandpa's. We were able to buy him loads of food and resources, because I'm not sure how it was in Malta, but in the UK it was like an extreme rush to purchase things. People were stockpiling.
We had that very briefly, but yes.
Yeah. But from my understanding, actually in Malta, the situation was really good in comparison to a lot of countries. But in the UK, especially because our death toll was very quickly very high, it was like a national mania. So we were in a very strict lockdown, not leaving the house except for groceries, for about 4 months. And then I had this internship opportunity. I came to Malta in July when the situation was quite good. And it was like being on a different planet, because there were so many more freedoms. It was so much more relaxed here, yeah, with regards to COVID-19.
So what's this? We've heard with also with Edward about his internship. But what is the internship in essence? Also for our listeners to understand what your role is as part of this internship.
So it's kind of hard to define, actually. There's a lot of different science communication and science outreach projects here at the University of Malta, and our team is kind of dipping our toes in many of them, leading most of them. So primarily for me, I've been working on Science of the City. I would have been working more on different projects, but because of the kind of demands of COVID-19 and the ever-changing situation, Science of the City turned into a much more complicated beast than we'd imagined. Although I'm actually extremely grateful for it, because it was a lot of fun kind of bouncing back from each setback we had. But as well as Science of the City, I've been working with Think Magazine. I'm currently writing an article for them and hoping to start another article. There's also projects we have like SciCulture, Nucleus, Malta Cafe Scientifique. All of these projects I've been really interested in and try to help where I can. But generally, my time has been mainly devoted to Science of the City.
And what inspired you to join this niche of in your career? Why specifically STEM?
So my background, like I said, is in chemistry in the University of Newcastle upon Tyne in the UK and the University of Vermont in the US. But although I love science dearly, like it's something really close to my heart, I just didn't quite fall in love with the working environment of academia and laboratories. So when I graduated, I was an English teacher for about 4 years, but then I kind of felt that pull to return to my STEM background. So I went to Abu Dhabi for the Science Festival, and then it was like, this makes sense to me, because I'm working with the public, I'm training people, I'm using all my skills as a teacher, but I'm also getting to reconnect with my kind of science background. So then I figured I could pursue a career in science communication, not just science as a research subject. And when I saw this internship, I mean, it was called the Science Communication Internship, so it just made a lot of sense.
Yeah. You found your ikigai, and the Buddhists have this concept of you find something that you enjoy doing, something that maintains you in your
exactly.
life, and something that makes a difference in other people's lives. And
exactly.
I think that's beautiful to find, even at our age. And you mentioned that you lived in a number of countries, in a number of continents, quite frankly. One of the main challenges is also to understand different cultures if you're not exposed to them. Living and literally breathing the culture, you will get to take a lot from it. What is your perception from your experience also of the LGBT communities in different cultures that you were exposed to?
So it's always been a challenge, really. And I mean, to be frank, as a gay person myself, if I move into a different country, one of the first things I'm going to do is look up the laws. And I've lived in various countries with various different laws, but it's also not just the legality protecting LGBT people, it's also the kind of national mentality with regards to LGBT plus identities and the attitudes of the local people. So there's a lot to consider. I've definitely encountered challenges in each country, but I think because I did my homework and I tried to just be open and be myself as much as possible, it's always worked out really well. And it's actually given me a lot of confidence in basically humanity, because you can go to countries where people have not had experiences living with LGBT people. For instance, when I was living in Chile teaching English in a secondary school, I was living with a host family who'd actually previously disowned a family member for being gay. So they hadn't realized when I was moving into them that I myself was a gay person. I came out to them very quickly just because I didn't want to live in the closet for a few months, and we formed such a wonderful relationship that they ended up kind of reintegrating their cousin who had previously they'd stopped talking to on account of his sexuality. So I think just being visible, being there to represent people who are like you, who might not share the same privileges as you, from coming from a European country, for instance, I think it's incredibly valuable, but you do also have to take care of yourself. For instance, in Abu Dhabi, I was not openly gay because the criminality of that, as they would describe behavior, is too risky for me to be myself in full.
Yeah, I think that's a very beautiful story, and thank you for sharing it. Is also that through your openness and through your open dialogue with your host family, it impacted not only one person's life but the whole family in their view of I think diversity and sexuality in general. And this program, Andrew, is the first program on Maltese media, traditional media being TV or radio, that is particularly focused on LGBT issues. And the reason why we are producing this and presenting it is also because we want to exhibit real life stories. And you know, Malta has a lot of pride when it comes to LGBT progressive laws in the last few years. But we want to highlight the reality in the streets, as we say. As an expat, what is your perception? What is your reality of a gay man living in Malta? How do you find our country? Because it always intrigues me what the viewpoint is from out there.
So I've got to be honest, I'm an LGBT plus, I always forget the plus, I apologize, person living in Malta, but I've been living here during COVID times. I think that we all kind of live in our bubbles, especially with social media, where like our opinions are reflected back at us. But now even more so, I'm living with flatmates who are incredibly open and caring and very open to me for being gay. I'm working with a team like Ed Duca, who you've been speaking to, is openly pansexual. A lot of members of our team are openly LGBT plus. So to be honest, I think I've got a very rosy image of Malta, but I recognize that it's because I'm not living a typical day-to-day Maltese life. I'm kind of caught in this weird little bubble because of the circumstances of 2020. But I will say that when I did my research into Malta and found out, which I hadn't known previously, how kind of forward-thinking Malta had been in terms of legality protecting LGBT plus people, that definitely kind of secured the idea that I would come here, and it does make Malta seem a more inclusive and welcoming place.
That's a very fair point. I mean, that's fair. And of course, your work here in Malta, I believe, is quite busy days, but also something that is you're working on, and you mentioned the science in the city. And I'd like us to also go into what measures have you and your team and the team that you work in taken upon to also actively change maybe policy or legislation or the way how you work to be LGBT friendly.
So it's something, when we began, we had a team meeting, which I was a big proponent of, and I was extremely grateful that everyone else on the team was also a huge proponent of, is the idea of inclusivity, not just in terms of sexuality, but in terms of race, religion, neurodiversity, all these different topics which can cause a person to feel isolated in a festival. I think it's wonderful that our entire team was on the same wavelength of wanting to be champions of inclusivity. Of course, like Ed Duke was saying earlier, you get caught up in other things. And that's kind of the sad thing about working on these initiatives with LGBT+, is that it can feel like you don't have time for it sometimes, which is a shame. But what is really nice is that whenever we were working on new aspects of Science of the City, we had it on the back of our minds because we'd started the project with these conversations. So just as an example, recently, we've been doing evaluation surveys for Science of the City, as we do every year. But for the first time, I was speaking with Qualia Analytics, who do our evaluation surveys, and pushed for them to not just ask, okay, what gender are you, which obviously needs to be inclusory for non-binary people, for instance, but also asking questions about how do you identify in terms of your sexuality, do you have any physical or mental disabilities, things like that. And through these questions in a survey, which might not seem very impactful, that's how we get the data to start the conversations. So if we're starting to figure out more about our audience, more about the diversity of our audience, we can find out maybe what we're missing, maybe what we're doing really well, and then learn from that and share that knowledge with other festivals around the world.
But this is what is your relationship with other festivals around the world? Is it Science in the City? Is it something that is an open conversation that's happening from time to time?
Yeah, so there's obviously we're part of European Researchers Night, which is a huge project. I'm not sure how many cities in Europe it involves, but it's a lot. I think it's about 50 countries or so. We've got our own network, so our European Researchers Night network. And I've been really grateful because I've been the one kind of working with them the most this year, which I've loved. So I've been working on some different video projects which have been implemented in various different countries. And our network is, it incorporates universities from Sweden, from Scotland, Ireland, Wales, Spain as well. So that's kind of our tight team of partners this year. There's also some other more international projects where we're incorporating as many ERNs as possible. But when it comes to the projects where there is a capacity in terms of how much you can deliver in a time frame, we've got our tight network, and it's a very kind of supporting, open network. So we've been able to have these conversations about inclusivity on an international kind of trans-European level, which is really nice.
And Malta is leading that conversation, or are we leaders in that conversation when it comes to inclusivity, or just... What is the reason? One, are we leading it? And two, what is the feedback that you're getting from other international organizations?
Honestly, and I mean, this plays into what I said before, when you can kind of seem like you're in a bubble sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it's such a wonderful, supportive community. Oh, yeah. So, yes, Malta is leading conversations, but it's not like any other country isn't. I think that when you're in this field of science communication, you tend to be a person who's open, who's interested in inclusivity, who's interested in having conversations, frankly, about these issues that we face today.
So away from the bubble, because we were mentioning this bubble, which is very true. I mean, we all are, whether or not we are aware of it, we do live in a bubble. But how do you also, within your personal experience, also within your experience as a member of Science in the City, how can we communicate this inclusivity through science to those who are not in the bubble? Because Science in the City, mind you, I believe is one of the biggest festivals here in Malta. And quite a lot of families join, and quite a lot of individuals and artists want to join Science in the City because of its value and exposure. And not everyone is within that bubble. So how do we communicate this to the general population?
Well, I think that's the biggest challenge with science communication. And that's why the entire field of science communication exists, is that we can feel like there's a big disparity between researchers and members of the public. And that's really unfortunate, because in truth, there's so much about research which can benefit you in your daily life, and vice versa. Communicating with publics it's not just about teaching them your research, it's also about learning from them, gaining insights which might steer the direction of a work that you're doing. So the reason why I keep kind of referring to the bubble is because we've got that attitude sometimes within academia, where you are in a bit of a bubble and maybe universities feel like they're leading the progression within a country. Whereas in truth, the more that we collaborate, the more that we reach out to have frank conversations with people who come from a different background to yourself, that's when the real change is made, in my opinion. Because it's great to pat yourself on the back and say, okay, me and my colleagues who are all in this field are doing a wonderful job. But with Science in the City, our focus, and our focus not just this year but in future years, is reaching new audiences, so that new audiences who wouldn't typically come to a science and arts festival can have these conversations, gain these insights, and equally importantly, we can gain their insights.
Yeah, it's a two-way conversation, and I really appreciate that. And also mentioning how academia is not necessarily the leading factor. And I always say that university is a microscopic of the general society, but also it needs to work within the general and with different stakeholders outside of its remit. But Science and the City is here. We touched upon a little bit with Ed about science. Science and this is being online. I know that you mentioned that a lot of your work this year was also going through that. What happened this year? What was Science in the City like? What activities were there? What was your experience having an online festival? Was it the first online festival that you took part?
My only experience in a festival was at the Abu Dhabi Science Festival, and it's very different because I wasn't behind the scenes. I was leading a workshop and training local volunteers to help me lead the workshop. So it's very much a public-facing role. So I was interested to join this to get kind of a backstage behind the scenes view of a festival to see like what goes into actually creating it. And it's been an amazing, crazy lesson, because initially we were planning to do it around Triton Fountain in Valletta, just like they'd always done it in previous years for Science of the City. Then as a second wave started to come in Malta, we moved it to Fort St. Elmo, and I was working with a couple of my colleagues to develop COVID-19 safety measures. Basically, how do you do a socially distanced, non-physically interactive science and arts festival when every previous year's, that was the whole point, was that it's physically interactive. So it's kind of a very difficult task, but I'm very proud of the work we did. But unfortunately, the situation in Malta got so bad and continues to be very bad, unfortunately. So we moved it entirely digital. And so we had to work with all the organizations and our partners, researchers, artists, everybody, to restructure their activities from physical activities to activities which work in a studio. And we basically ran it like it was a live TV show for 3 days. We rented a studio. We had long shifts. It was crazy. It was amazing. It was really fun. And we had a lot of different things in our program. And as well as that live studio festival, we had Explore the Arches on our website, which is still open, where people could come to view pre-recorded content that had been submitted by organisations. And we did a bunch of different pre-festival events, mainly done via Zoom, because that's kind of the most convenient way to interact with people these days.
And where can we access the information? Google Science in the City would easily, you can find all the pre-information that you just mentioned.
Yes, especially on our Facebook page for Science of the City. We've still kept up all of the recordings because as well as doing it via Zoom, we've been live streaming onto Facebook Live. So all of the pre-festival events are still there. The majority of the studio events are still there. The only exception is, for instance, say there's children involved in an activity, you can't live stream it to Facebook and have it quite so publicly available. So there are some exceptions, but the vast majority is still there online. And for Explore the Arches with the pre-recorded content, that's just on our website, scienceofthecity.org.
Perfect. One of the more pertinent issues, I believe, is a 2020 reality, is how we live in a very connected community, and globalization is a reality. I don't think it's a foreign concept that we might want to believe in. And through that comes diversity in opinions, as we were mentioning also with Edward. And one of them is how there's a rise on homophobia and transphobia. Even in Malta, unfortunately, we saw a rise, especially in transphobia, and that's why I was quite appreciated also of Edward mentioning those particular challenges, even at university. As a gay man yourself, and again, the bubble. I appreciate that a lot. But from what we see out there, from us, because we do need to challenge ourselves as well through our own bubble, because I think I really relate to this bubble. But how can we, how do we see this rise coming up on social media? How can we challenge it as activists? I call ourselves activists. What is your opinion on?
So honestly, my opinion with things like social media and any kind of media these days is very mixed, because especially, I mean, I'm a British person, so I went through Brexit. I had no idea that my country felt that way. I really didn't, because I feel very connected to the EU. I feel like I'm a European person first and a British person second, really. But it was a lesson in humility and a lesson in terms of I don't fully understand the people that I might be walking past in the street the next day. And then Donald Trump getting elected, I had exactly the same emotion. I was completely shocked. My American friends, because I've lived there, I've got a lot of friends in America, they all had the same emotions I had during Brexit, where they didn't expect it to happen. So I think it is quite tricky to get out of the echo chamber that we find ourselves in. And I think previously, maybe people felt like they had very strong national identities, and a lot of people, like following Brexit, still do. But now also people have these very insular identities through the internet and through social media, where you think you're reaching out to people, but actually there's algorithms in play kind of feeding you the narrative that you're seeking. So I think it's very important to basically use your critical thinking. If you're following a news website, keep in mind that every single news website will have some kind of bias, especially if you're getting your news from Facebook, for instance. Is someone sponsoring the content that you're reading? Is there money involved? Why might someone want you to think a certain way about a certain topic? You've got to take everything you read on the internet with a little pinch of salt and be aware that you're existing in this world, which was kind of created for you by algorithms to kind of like keep you in that bubble.
I'm really appreciative of this also, because I mentioned with Edward how I personally believe that the educational system has failed me personally, and the number of, and I have always this conversation that, you know, I tarnish a little bit the Maltese educational system. But even this, what you're mentioning, and this is a conversation which goes beyond LGBT in STEM. In reality, this is about us as individuals and the information that we are being fed, quite frankly, fed. You know, maybe I'll also challenge myself to think that it's not only Malta. You know, there's other, there's other factors in play here. We do have six minutes left, and I know that the time is moving quite quickly. But I'd like also to have this conversation on what's next for 2021 for you personally, and in general, how do you see the LGBT community growing in STEM, and STEM growing in the LGBT community?
I'm actually, with regards to the LGBT plus community in STEM, I think I'm optimistic, because I'm really happy that these conversations are being had. And when I started my undergraduate degree, I think it was 2011, so I was 18 years old. And when I started at university, there was no representation, there were no conversations, there was no information being offered to us. There were LGBT plus student societies, but if you're 18, you've just moved out of your family's house, you're not even out of a closet yet, you're not necessarily going to be actively seeking these communities and these networks. So I'm very happy that universities are more willing to have these conversations. They're more willing to offer support to these initiatives, like the LGBT plus STEM benches, which is a lovely, simple, effective idea of communication. So with that regards, I'm actually very optimistic. I just think we can't give up, and we can't always kind of put it on the back bench. We need to find time to really prioritize these initiatives to make sure the next generation of LGBT plus people in STEM feel like they're welcome and they belong and they're a genuine part of both communities, which is the most important thing.
Very much. I think it's unfortunate also that the University of Malta, we don't have an LGBT organization in particular. I mean, there was, but unfortunately circumstances led for that not to happen. It may be a positive also, because I truly believe that LGBT activism should be the activism of everyone. It shouldn't be particular to an LGBT organization, but sometimes it's needed. Sometimes it's needed because it needs to be the driving force. And definitely, and I made this call before and I'll keep on repeating it, that all the students that are following this radio program, you know, let's unite together and let's make it work. out of curiosity, have you visited Gozo? Because I'm originally from the island of Gozo, and I try to get as much expats as possible to visit the island.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that at least you visited Gozo. Again, as an LGBT activist myself, there's also the double insularity of being from Gozo, and there are the regional challenges on that as well. And I was explaining about how we can also try to do something on a small island such as Gozo, 30,000 people, and from the cities that you mentioned, 30,000 people is just a very small neighborhood.
Yeah.
So there's also that as well. But at the end of the day, I know that your internship is going to end very soon. What is the main takeaway that you will take from your experience here in Malta?
Honestly, my experience has been amazing, and it's come at a very good time, especially because the UK has been in such a problematic situation this year. I felt really, really fortunate to be able to come to Malta at a time where Malta was kind of showing that it was very capable in terms of COVID. At least when I arrived, Malta had done a wonderful job and had really taken care of its citizens. So I was really impressed by that. The whole internship, I mean, I was having an interview the other day for a different project, and within the interview, I was able to draw so much from this internship, and it's because of the challenges that we've faced this year. And I hope that it's not just me saying that, I hope that everyone can speak that about 2020, is that it was incredibly challenging, but at the same time, you can learn a lot from it. And I think if we all dig for the positives, and some people will have to dig more than others, we can use this as an opportunity for real growth and a real growth in the sense of a community, and especially after we get past COVID, more of a physical community, maybe engaging less just through online mediums, which is amazing, of course, but also to reconnect in person, I think would be such a wonderful thing. And to answer your question, I've been to Gozo. I love Gozo.
Perfect. We have a seal of approval as well. Andrew, thank you so much for joining this discussion. And I wish you well in your career. And I hope that you come back to Malta and you experience Malta in a different light than COVID-19. And you can experience
maybe the
hustle and bustle of the Maltese islands. And you, thank you. Dak nel program now. Thank you, Edward Duca, Andrew Firmbank. I hope I said your surname.
You did. You nailed it. But program
li tkellemna dwar il-komunità LGBT fix-xjenza, l-matematika, t-teknoloġija u l-inġinerija, STEM u anke il-proġett Science and the City u kif l-inklużjoni mhijiex waħda biss fuq is-sesswalità ma' l-identitajiet differenti li jagħmlu l-individwu. Dan il-programm jerġa' jixxandar ukoll matul il-ġimgħa fuq din il-frekwenza u programmi oħra bħal dawn se jkun ħajbqgħu magħkom matul il-ġimgħat li ġejjin. Il-ġimgħa dilha se jkollna lill-drakma u se nkunu qed nitkellmu dwar l-ispiritwalità u s-sesswalità fost il-komunità LGBT. Għalhekk għallejliet il-miliet nistiedinkom tkunu magħna wkoll għal edizzjoni oħra ta' aħna. Hemm on board ċisselmilkom u tislijiet.